Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production. Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky. CATS, champs, champs, champs.
Oh, it's a sea of blue. It's beautiful.
It's awesome.
Oh my gosh, they're crazy. They're the most dedicated fans I've ever seen.
Go Big Blue!
Big Blue Nation, show your Wildcat pride and band together with the Podcats. All the UK propaganda you can handle.
Welcome into another edition of the Podcats. I'm Kenny Colston, and with me we have a special guest host, Chad Seward. Chad, say hello to the masses.
Hello, Kenny. Thanks for having me.
And tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, normally Chris graces your chair, so you've got big shoes to fill, but tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're a qualified Cats fan to be on the Podcats.
Well, Kenny, I'm a big Kentucky fan. I watch all the games. I consider myself a pretty knowledgeable sports fan. That's about it.
Okay. You know what? We have low standards here, so we're going to pass.
That's great.
You.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to pass you, but we're going to see, because obviously there's not a lot of news to recap this week. There was no game. There's a bye week. Kentucky didn't lose. Woohoo! Yeah. Not a loss, so bye week.
Bye week was favored, by the way.
By 3 points,
yeah,
but we covered.
So we covered the spread.
That's right. So, anyways, there's not a lot to go over. There wasn't a lot of, I feel like, injury news that's coming out, and we've talked about this before. You pay attention to the show that Stoops is very tight with his injury news, so
yeah.
We really don't know what's going to happen with Max Smith at the time of this recording. We don't know what's going to happen to DeMarco Robinson, who's just been gone for a couple games. And then even Dante Romph. I mean, he appears that he's going to play, but it's not for sure yet. So we don't really have news on that front. No one really does. But there is injury news on Florida's front, and that's what we're going to talk about. That's the next opponent, UK-Florida, 7 o'clock this Saturday, which I'm happy we're back at night games. Football
Oh, yes,
is
yes.
not supposed to be played at noon. I said that this week on Twitter, and a few salty U of L fans took that as a cheap shot. No, we played new games, too.
Yeah.
I just generally hate them in college football.
Student section, get there early.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's a 7 o'clock game,
yes.
So surely they can tailgate all the time and stumble in there, but... Anyways, biggest injury news I think that broke today was that Florida's main cog in their defense, Dominic Easley, probably is out with a torn ACL. Florida, Will Muschamp, is not confirming that. He says he's tweaked it. You know, I've tweaked my knee before, and it wasn't an ACL tear. That's a little
yes.
bit more than a tweak, but that could be potentially big. And, Chad, we were talking. This is not the first injury for Florida. I mean, this is stacking up pretty good for UK, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, Kenny, if you were going to write a narrative of UK finally breaking the streak, this is how you would write it. Starting QB out. Starting defensive line out. Starting offensive lineman out. I mean, what do they say? Every coach says the game's won in the trenches. Offensive line, defensive line. You're missing two cogs there. I mean, at home, is it a freshman quarterback starting for Florida?
No, but he might as well
be.
This
is his first start?
He came back. First start, yes, correct.
Okay.
He did come in the Tennessee game and actually led Florida to the victory. Not great by any means, but he's actually a redshirt junior. So he's not a freshman, but he
yeah.
just hasn't even sniffed the field. So
exactly.
he might as
okay.
well be a freshman. He's taken all the practice reps in the world. But until the Tennessee game last week, he hadn't really taken a – he hadn't even attempted a pass before
yeah.
he was thrown in there because of injury.
Everything is setting up very well for UK. You know, I would like to be a little bit more healthy. Of course, Max Smith is going to be on the injury report every single week.
You know, that's just how he is.
Yes,
I mean, he's
– you know, with a broken heart, he'll be on there. You know, he's going to be on there all the time, and that's just what we're going to have to live with. But – with that said, there's a reason why UK has lost 26 straight. You know, now I was talking to you earlier. This isn't the same Florida team that you and I grew up watching. You know,
right.
there's no Danny Werfel. There's no Rex Grossman.
Steve Spurrier,
you know, thinks he needs another touchdown up 63-7. There's none of that. You know, there's no Tim Tebow. I mean, why not? Why can't we win? You know, I think...
Well, this is kind of the final streak to snap, is it not?
I mean, yeah.
For all Joker's faults, he did snap...
He did beat Spurrier.
He beat Spurrier, and he beat Tennessee.
Yes.
Ran Derek Dooley out of town. If there's one thing we can look back for Joker Phillips on, it's thankfully snapping that Tennessee streak.
Exactly.
That being said, his games against Florida were never even close.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean... I understand when Ron Meyer or Urban Meyer was there, but the Ron Zook, I mean, those years, even he made Muschamp look good as a head coach. But, you know, we're talking like, see, I remember clearly down in the swamp, I was at this game. Kentucky gets like three punts blocked in a row, and you're just grabbing your head thinking, how in the world do you get three punts blocked in a row?
The game last year was awful.
Not good. So you have that going for him. I mean, it's not like Kentucky's players have changed all that much.
Yeah.
But it could be interesting. I, this Murphy guy, he's a running quarterback, and that could be interesting for UK. Historically, not been able
to... Nightmarish.
Nightmare is the exact word I was looking for. But, you know, I have to go back to that Louisville game where the defense was pretty stout, and I think... The measure of DJ Elliott and Mark Stoops will be how can they defend against a running quarterback.
And if you remember their second game, Stoops had said something about, you know, with that running quarterback. Who is it they played?
Miami of Ohio.
He said, you know, playing Georgia Tech all those years who does that running offense, that option, that prepared him for that. He should be a little bit prepared.
Well, yeah, he's had Taj Boyd at Clemson to go against when he was at Florida State the last couple of years. I mean, surely he's been around long enough.
Right.
They didn't invent the running quarterback yesterday. That guy didn't, I mean, it didn't start yesterday. It's like people with the read option that's taken over the NFL. That did, Mike Vick was running that with the Falcons.
Correct.
So, anyways, it should be interesting. That's really what I'm going to watch for. I mean, I'm not ready to predict a UK victory because I just...
I'm not either.
The offense isn't where I would like for it to be.
No.
And I think we saw that in the Louisville game. But defensively, they're pretty stout. It'll be interesting to see whether they play the 3-4 or the 4-3. They've switched it up. Maybe they'll go both to try to kind of get into the head of this new Florida quarterback. I think his name's Murphy. But to be able to contain that run because, you know, Trey Burton, who has tore up UK for years, has been silent this season.
Yes.
I think the Florida offense is anemic at best, even with Driscoll. Now that they have Murphy there, I don't know what they're going to be. Their running game isn't as strong. I mean, it used to be that Florida may not have had the most bruising running backs in the world, but those guys were fast. I mean, you just couldn't catch them. And I just don't see that. I mean, the game they played against Tennessee, both teams played horrible. But the difference was that Florida had a defense that just absolutely destroyed Tennessee, and they won the field position battle. With Easley out, you know, Florida still has three or four other defensive tackles that are good. Their secondary is amazing. That's scary for me, considering our wide receivers apparently have a case of the dropsies again.
Exactly.
So I'm not sure about the offense yet. I do like the kind of semi-start of JoJo Kemp on the depth chart. He's been moved to the vaunted or status. Raymond Sanders starting or JoJo Kemp. I think he's been a spark plug. I would like to see DeMarco Robinson back out there to give some stability to the wide receivers. But until I start to see the air raid click, I really can't even say there's going to be any upsets except maybe Tennessee and maybe Missouri. And that's only because I hope the offense is running full steam by there and there's not major injuries. But you're exactly right. If I was building a narrative to beat Florida, this would be easily not playing would be the number one guy. I mean... For all that Driscoll is or isn't, I mean, I feel like UK could pick him off a few times. He's not all world to me. He's not a Tebow. He's not even a Chris Leak, to be honest with you. But it should be interesting. What actually do you think is going to happen? I mean, we're talking about all these different scenarios, but let's actually put ourselves in the game. How do you see this game going?
Honestly, I think I see it exactly how the UVL game went. I think we make some stops, and we hang with them, you know, just like in the Louisville game. It was 3-3 for half of the half, half the first half. And Kentucky had chance after chance after chance to get a quick touchdown, maybe put some pressure on Bridgewater and UofL, maybe get their nerves rattled a little bit, get the crowd pumped up, and then who knows what happens.
Right.
For for an upset to happen, they have those when those wide receivers go in and they get open, they got to make the plays. There were tons of times when they would get open and they would drop it.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost taking points off the board. You've got to seize those opportunities and you got to score to put pressure on this guy who's never started a game before. And
right, because it's one thing to be the guy who comes in on the rescue and you really weren't supposed to be in. This is your moment and your adrenaline's all week. They're game planning for you, buddy. Like, you're not surprising anybody. Tennessee did not know what Murphy held. No one
and
did.
We have about a whole week to prepare.
Right.
I mean, Mark Stoops is sitting on his couch, you know, over a week preparing for this.
Right. What do you think? I mean, if he didn't watch the entire Florida-Tennessee game, you know, I'd be shocked. But what do you think? Does Stoops' familiarity the last couple of years with Muschamp and Florida, does that help at all? I mean, or does it really just come down to talent?
Well, I think, like you said, the offense is going to be a little different than what he's seen on tape, you know, the last couple of years. But the defense, I assume, is running the same, so he should be prepared for that. And I think it comes down to talent. And even though, like, they've got a couple guys missing, but let's face it, their second and third string guys probably stack up with our first string guys, most of them. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, they're littered with four and five star. Their third string is like a five star.
You know, and look, Muschamp, this is a must win. You know, a must win and look good. You know, it's not just I have to get out of Commonwealth with a W, 20-17. That's almost a loss to Florida, you know?
Right, they don't have moral victories like we can.
Exactly, you know, we'll go in that game and say, you know, we were right there. Muschamp doesn't have that, you know, he needs to go in and win like Florida usually wins. So he's going to be geared up, you know. Muschamp, he's on the hot seat. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, I think he, last season I think was largely a disappointment, even though Florida only lost one or two games.
I think they were 11-1.
Before the Sugar Bowl. Yeah. But it just seemed disappointing, you know, the whole season did.
Yeah.
And then that Sugar Bowl loss to Louisville, I think, firmly planted him on the hot seat. I'm not just saying that because I don't like Louisville, but Florida viewed Louisville, and you saw this in the way they played, as not on their level. And so to get beat by a team like they did in the Sugar Bowl when they're not on your level, when Florida has gotten almost greedy with how they expect their teams to be. I mean, people forget, before Spurrier came around, they were literally a laughing stock. I mean, this is not like Notre Dame, where they have abundant history. It's all pretty modern. That being said, they've gotten used to their modern success. So I think he's firmly, I mean, he lost to Miami this year. That's not good, because Miami is clearly not what they used to be.
They're rebuilding.
But that was a key win for them.
And they didn't look good in their wins.
No, they haven't. Yeah. No, that Tennessee game, I mean, for a while you thought Tennessee was a play or two from taking that game over. Muschamp is a defensive guy. Clearly his defense is stacked, but he's running out of time on offense. I mean, it's not inconceivable. I don't think Florida would ever fire anyone midseason. I don't think they're that type of program.
You don't
program.
See that very often.
No, you don't. And it's the same reason Mac Brown still has a job.
Yeah.
But because Texas is too big of a program for an in-season firing. But, you know, if he loses to Kentucky or he has a catastrophic loss like that this year, you could see him gone. I mean, he doesn't have a great offensive staff. God love him. I mean, he's got Brent Pease, who used to coach at UK, and
Joker
Phillips, who is actually in, I think, what is his appropriate role a coach, wide receivers coach and recruiting coordinator. But that offense is so bad, and you have to realize the thing that drove Florida to success was offense.
Right.
So to not have it, it's almost a shock. It's not like they're, you know, Oklahoma or Nebraska, where defense, you know, led them Wisconsin, where, you know, you run the ball three times for 3 yards and hope your defense holds out. These guys want to score down in Florida.
How do you think about this comparison? Is it like going from Rick Pitino to Tubby Smith?
A little bit. I mean, that's not an unfair thing. Pitino, Pitino's teams could play defense too. They pressed,
but in a very different manner.
Exactly. Yeah. But the offense was there too, yeah, where Tubby was mainly defense and the offense was pretty anemic.
Motion.
Exactly. Yeah. And Florida is dropping off a little bit on the recruiting, which that's almost unfair to say because, I mean,
what are like fifth in the country still, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, that being said, you know, to have a top 15 recruiting class, if you're a prominent program in the SEC, is seen as a failure. Because, you know, Tennessee is up there now. Alabama, I mean, it's hard.
Year.
So Muschamp is clearly, he's not settled into being a head coach. He could be on the hot seat. If Kentucky pulls this off, you know, I said this last week.
If
it's even close, you know, that's just going to heat up his seat. If Kentucky does win, we're in this stretch of games now where I say if Mark Stoops pulls out a win, sign him to a contract extension.
Oh, yes.
So we're in the dead heat of that with South Carolina, Alabama. He wins any of these, sign him to a contract extension. Moral victories, he has the ability for those all across the board. But it should be interesting. This not being a rivalry game, but I think this Kentucky team would like to break a streak. And I think the fans would like to see the final streak broken.
Yes.
And just kind of get that monkey off their back. Who do you think will be the standout player of this game? And let's just focus on Kentucky's side. Who do you think, if Kentucky were to get a victory or to remain close, who's it going to come down to? Because I'll tell you mine.
Go ahead.
Mine is going to be, I'm going to stick with this guy until he proves me wrong. But I have to say to Za'Darius. I mean,
that's who I was going to say.
That's an easy one. Yeah. That's an easy one. But the way he did Louisville's offensive line and Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, he could flush this guy out every play.
Is he healthy? Because
I think he is. Whatever it was, whatever it was, he came back. He's not shown up on the injury reports, but that's going to be my guy. I mean, secondarily, Avery Williamson and Bud Dupree, but clearly the defense is going to have to almost pitch a shutout
for
this to happen.
I'm going to go with Jalen Whitlow, and I'm going to say that he's got to come in the game, first quarter, get rid of those pregame nerves. I mean, he has been awful.
So should we assume you think Whitlow will start?
I think so. I think he's going to be in there. And really, the way I see it, I don't think it's not so much Max Smith's fault. I think it might be the receivers. I think maybe Neil Brown is saying, I don't know if we have the receivers to run what I want to run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Max Smith doesn't throw the prettiest ball in the world.
No.
And if it's not hitting these receivers square in the numbers, they're not catching it.
Well,
and
sometimes
they might not even guess, because they might not even catch it at all.
Yeah.
So
we've seen that before, hitting right in the numbers.
Exactly. I think you're definitely going to see some Max Smith, but I think you'll see Jalen Whitlow come in, and they're going to probably play it a little safe. A couple of option reads to not turn the ball over and get it out. They cannot turn the ball over early.
See, you know, I think this Louisville game, I think that's almost what got them in trouble, was they were playing it safe with Whitlow. Three straight read options and expect that Florida's just not going to bring the house, because there's one surefire way to just blow up the read option, and that's just to put everyone in the backfield. I mean, then it doesn't matter if he hands it off to the running back or he pulls it. Read option works when it's just the defensive line coming in, and it's all based on the defensive end, whether he shuts down to get the running back or whether he contains. Well, what Louisville was doing was sending linebackers and defensive ends, and then everyone just gets blown up.
Right. But I think Neil Brown and Stoops is almost like, I don't know if they want to put Max Smith in that throwing air raid offense yet. He makes some weird decisions sometimes. I mean, there could have been a lot of interceptions in that game. And I think they're almost going to say, okay, I'll take a three and out over a Max Smith interception for a touchdown or continuous drops.
Mm-hmm.
By the receivers. And I think once the confidence comes from the coaching staff with the receivers, I think you'll see more Max Smith. But until then, I think they're really just sticking Whitlow out there, running safe plays with Timmons and Kemp, you know, sweeps, mm-hmm. stuff like that, and hope they just break one. I think that's where that's what they tried to do against Western.
They didn't work.
And it didn't work. But I don't know if the Max Smith air raid will work either. And it might cause more trouble than it's worth. But Whitlow's going to have to be ready before the game starts. You know, he killed them early on. You know, that fumble the Western Kentucky game where the stagnant offense.
Right.
You know, he's going to have to get rid of those nerves. I don't know how you do it, but He's going to have to get rid of the nerves and just go out and play and make a play.
I hear you. Let me ask you one last thing, and then I'll ask for your official prediction. If Smith is ruled out of the game, he cannot play, one reason or the other, Whitlow struggles. Do we see Patrick Towles?
No.
Why?
I think, now if Joker Phillips was still here, I think you would. You got to remember, Mark Stoops didn't recruit these people. He didn't make any promises. He didn't say, he wasn't out recruiting Patrick Towles saying, I promise you, you know, we'll get
you're
going to play.
You're the next Jared Lorenzen,
exactly.
Sands, 200 pounds.
I think, I just can't see a scenario where if Patrick Towles wasn't, you know, what we want him to be,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't they play him at all? You know, why wouldn't he even get in the game in Miami, Ohio, or anything like that?
You know, I remember the spring game. He looked awful. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. He was not there. So, you know, they're thinking about redshirting him. You know, there's also the Drew Barker coming in. I don't know what's going to happen with Towles, but I was just curious if you thought we would see him.
I don't think so. I think us Kentucky fans want the Kentucky boy to get in there and play and be good. But he just might not be that good. I'm sorry, but I can't see. Now, if Joker were here, you know, I think it, or the previous coaches or whatever who made promises to him, it might be a different story. But to me, Mark Stoops didn't make a promise to Jalen Whitlow. It didn't make a promise to Max Smith or the other guys. You know, he should have came into camp this you know, spring and said, may the best man win. And from all accounts, Towles was even behind Phillips. He was behind him, you know. So I just don't think he's there, you know. And I don't think Mark Stoops is doing it to be mean or, you know, whatever. Like I said, if Towles was ready to play and ready to take on that starting job, I think we would have seen him by now. But I just don't think he's there. And I think they're going to take their lumps with Whitlow. And, you know, hopefully he gets better game by game by game. And maybe by the sixth or seventh game, he's ready to play in a full game and give it all, you know, all he's got.
Yeah, that's interesting. I largely agree with that. Let me give you my prediction, though. We're going to skip stat of the week this week because there's really no stat to do. I mean, we could dredge something up for the Florida game, but
yeah.
Unless you want to, you know, make it something about a loss, I really don't want to do that. So let's do official prediction, and that can just be our stat of the week. I think this is going to be a defensive showdown. That's what we've been talking about. And I think it's going to be a massive defensive showdown. I think Florida pulls it out 17-10. I think it's going to be not that close, but I just don't see Florida getting into the end zone that much. And, you know, one of the touchdowns could even be defensively. That's my prediction. I think it'll be close. I think Stoops will be able to claim a moral victory. I think UK fans will be frustrated all game because the scoreboard will be so close.
Right.
But the play on the field will not be.
I think it's going to play out exactly like the U of L game. I think we're going to go out. We're going to play good. It'll be 3-3 or maybe 7-7, and we'll have the ball. The crowd will be amped, pumped up, and, you know, DeMarco Robinson will be streaking down the field wide open and drop the ball.
No, we'll gosh, punt. No.
And then, you know, and then Florida will come in and get a touchdown. You know, we'll be right there. But remember, it's Kentucky football. And, you know, it's going to be right there. I think it's going to be a game where we can grab it, but we just don't make the plays to do it. I don't think we have the playmakers yet to do it. If Kentucky wins, it's going to have to be on a JoJo Kemp or a Ryan Timmons play that they just break, you know, where he should be tackled in the backfield, but he jukes three or four guys and goes in for a touchdown. They're going to have to catch some breaks and get lucky, or a Whitlow read option that he just plows over people and he runs for the end zone. I don't see them putting in the air raid and putting up 30 points.
Yeah, and I don't see Florida missing that many tackles.
I'm going to go Florida 24-7. I think they may have more defensive touchdowns than offensive touchdowns. I think we got to take care of the ball, and I don't think we will.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. It'll be an interesting game. I hope next week we can talk about that we were all wrong, but
yes.
I just don't see that happening. So we're in the murderer's row for football, the schedule. You know, get to look at, experience this by you know, appreciating the defense and what they can do, and watching all these great players and all these great teams.
And the main thing is they're getting better.
Exactly. Against great competition.
I mean, Western Kentucky game, I think everyone pressed the panic button.
And nerves.
They took and said, whoa, is Joker Phillips back? You know, and
I thought that.
They're getting better. You know, Miami-Ohio game, you can kind of throw out, maybe. You know, that team was awful.
Bad.
They ran, you know.
Alabama State might be better.
They ran a high school offense. And then the Louisville game, I mean, there's not too much to complain about. I mean, a few basic plays they make. I'm talking about basic. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, well, if Whitlow or whoever could just broke the tackle. I'm talking about if a wide receiver would have just caught a ball when he's wide open, that game's different. You know, we put a little bit of pressure on U of L, and that game is a little bit different. They're getting better each game, and now it's a week off the bye week. We've had plenty of time to prepare. We should be very, very well prepared. That's what I'm going to look for. I'm going to look for, does Mark Stoops take this time, and how is he prepared? Is he gung-ho, and we come out the gates, and we are ready? And, you know, if we are that, and then we just make a couple of dumb mistakes, you know, we're getting better. That's all, you know. And as long as we get better each game, we know we're not going to beat Alabama or probably South Carolina. But if we can just continue to make strides, what more could you ask for, you know?
Not much at all. Not much at all. All right, Chad, let's switch over to basketball. We introduced basketball on the podcast last week. It's never too early for basketball, but we like to give football its fair due. The reason why we're talking basketball is because they are officially practicing only 2 hours a week. Not a whole lot. You can't do a whole lot there. It will gradually expand, but Big Blue Madness is no longer the start of practice.
And a quick note on that, the NCAA said we can, you know, all teams can practice, what is it, a few weeks early?
Yes.
Now, yeah. Starting out? I mean, how big is that to a John Calipari team?
That's huge to that team, to give them extra practice time as young as they are. Now everyone else has it too, but it's big for the development.
Not everybody has Julius Randle.
That's true. So, you know, like I said last week, we're not to the point yet where we want to talk about how we're going to go 40-0 and put up banner number 9. We will have that conversation about those realities, in my opinion. But for now, we've got our first practice reports from CoachCal.com. And my buddy Eric Lindsay has written them up for us as a public service to all UK fans. And I know they're just practice reports, and we're not going to overanalyze them, but it gives us a reason to talk basketball, and we'll never pass up that opportunity. So you've read these practice reports. If you have, Chad, if you have not read them, you can find them on CoachCal.com. It's basically 2 hours worth of practice, so take it with a grain of salt. But what is your biggest takeaway from these reports from Eric about this year, this upcoming team?
It's definitely going to be the three-point shooting. A lot of people, even experts you might want to say, have said three-point shooting is going to be their downfall. Think back to the John Wall team.
Who couldn't hit a three to save their life.
Couldn't hit a three to save their life. But a lot, what you forget about is, I think Eric Bledsoe set the record that year for as many three-pointers in a game. I think with 8.
He could shoot.
They had shooters. They just went cold in the game, which happens. The biggest takeaway is Eric says he's finding that theory about the lack of shooters to be, you know, false.
He says baseless,
James Young's a good shooter. Julius Randle can hit the shot. The twins are better than average on shooting. You know, I thought that was interesting.
Gives a shout out to Hood and Polson. We're going to get to them in a minute.
Yeah, I think if you're going to pick apart this team, it's a lack of shooters. And what Eric's saying is he's finding that kind of baseless. He's saying, you know, he doesn't see any evidence so far that this team can't shoot. Now, does that mean deep in the tournament they might have a bad shooting game? Of course not. But, you know, I think anything can happen in a game. You know,
right,
and
especially when you talk about those NCAA tournaments, these regionals are in domes.
Yes.
They're not really stadium floors. They're up on high, you know, on blocks and bricks and everything.
I think
else.
They're finally changing that.
Thank goodness, yes. Because the best shooting team can go cold
exactly.
With those sight lines. But that is interesting. I have heard that people thought that this was going to be a John Wall-esque team, and the only thing that could hurt them is their inability to shoot. So to hear that is interesting. I think the biggest thing for me, I've got two things. I'm going to cheat. And the first thing is you know, Eric reports that Dakari Johnson, when he wants, and I emphasize when he really wants to turn on the Jets, can give Willie Cauley-Stein fits. Now, Willie Cauley-Stein could be the best big man in college basketball. I mean, he wasn't bad last year. Very talented for a guy who hasn't...
Very athletic.
Yeah, who hasn't always played basketball. So, you know, I'm expecting big things from him, and Eric alludes to big things from Cauley-Stein, but to have Dakari Johnson come in and give him fits, he talked about one time where apparently Johnson just straight boxed, you know, Cauley-Stein completely out. I mean, just knocked him out of the paint cleanly to get a rebound, and which he put back for an offensive slam.
I love it.
You know, having that type of depth, especially in the big man area, you know, with Marcus Lee getting some shout-outs as well, that's crucial. The other thing that I find of interest is that Alex Poitras apparently has some unknown injury. Eric's referenced it a few times, but not really saying what it is.
He's been hanging out with Max Smith too much.
Maybe that's what it is. But, you know, I've read in a previous report that he was on the stationary bike. So I don't really know what the injury is, but... You know, part of the thing that really gets me amped up about this is you've got Julius Randle, but don't forget Alex Poitras, who can, when he turns it on, is a beast in and of itself. His biggest problem appears to be a lack of motor. So to have that depth as well, not saying that's a weakness, but it's you know, if you can go two or three deep at every position, that's just amazing.
Can I compound on that? Can I cheat too? I have another takeaway I just thought
please
of.
Please do.
Competition. This team is deep, and these practices, I think Eric says it. Sometimes last year, they didn't even have enough for a 5-on-5 scrimmage. And when they did, it was guys like me out there playing with them.
Right, walk-ons.
Yes, and I mean, you can put the Twins on separate teams. You can put Poitras and Julius Randle on separate teams. And I mean, the problem with Poitras last year was his motor. But to be honest, he didn't have anyone behind him pushing him. You know, who were we going to put in?
Nobody.
No one.
You had no one pushing Ryan Harrow. Polson, God love him, did awesome. But
yes. He has limits.
Ryan Harrow never thought of him as a real threat. No one was pushing Archie. Your only position battle was at the center position. And to be honest with you, once Noel went down, it wasn't a battle.
It was over. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. I think their practices are going to be a lot like the championship team's practices. You know, some of those practices would probably get better ratings than top 10 matchups on ESPN. I mean, some of those, they had great 5-on-5 matchups, and I think that's going to be the biggest thing for this team going forward.
It will be interesting to see when they actually get to see this team live, when we start playing exhibition games and everything else, but very promising to begin with. Now, we brought up Polson and John Hood. These guys are seniors. We know what they bring to the table. But you know, they get quite a bit of play in these practice reports, but you had a question about that.
Yeah, Kenny, I want to ask you, do you buy this or is this coach speak? Do you think in this practice report, it says guys like Derek Willis and John Hood and Jared Polson are playing great. They're shooting well. Derek Willis is competing. Do you honestly think we're going to see Derek Willis and John Hood and Jared Polson in a meaningful game?
Well, I think if you take them individually, if you take them as a group, I think you can say yes, because I do think there is one person who will actually see the floor, and I think that's Polson.
Yes.
I think he's paid his dues. I think Cal realizes he's paid his dues, and you will see him maybe not more than 2 minutes at the end of the first half. I mean, you would have to think Dominique Hawkins is the first point guard off the bench. But, you know, Cal sometimes runs two point guard sets, and I could see Hawkins and Polson in, and Hawkins running more of a two guard, or Polson even running a little bit of a two guard. He's really not tall enough to do that, but I think you will see him. But the other two, I think this is coach speak. I mean, Cal even says in there, you know, you all didn't think Derek Willis was going to play, but, you know, he might get thrown around, but he can score. Well, yes and no. There is something called a practice hero. Now, I never played major college sports, but I played in high school. And anyone who's played a sport in high school or even pickup games knows of the practice hero. the guy who goes in there, and because there's nothing on the line, you know, is in there elbowing yes. and in there, you know, hamming it up for coach and doing everything he's supposed to do and going off for 20 points in practice. And then all of a sudden the lights turn on and it's game time and he's nowhere to be found.
I think that's called the Josh Carrier effect.
Exactly. Whatever, the token UK white boy yes. effect, whatever you want to call it. I think that's what Derek Willis will be for the first couple of years of his career.
Unpopular opinion alert here, okay?
Okay.
If we see Derek Willis and John Hood in meaningful games, I think that's more of a bad sign. I think that means the guys like James Young maybe isn't quite there.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear that.
Or who he is, who we need him to be.
And let's clarify once again. You say meaningful games. You're not talking once we're up like 20, 30.
Yes.
Of course. But, you know, you're talking close games within 10.
Yes. I'm talking about SEC road game. We're down 6, 7 points in the second half. If we see those guys on the floor.
Like we did last year, not Willis.
Correct.
But, you know, I
that takes me back to a Tubby team when he was – sometimes he would be searching the bench because his stars – we're not playing like stars. We don't really see that or haven't seen that in the Cal system quite yet.
Right. Actually, you know what I would like to see with Derek Willis? You don't have this a lot in basketball. You wouldn't ever think about it with Cal, but you can redshirt in basketball too.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that wouldn't be worth it. I mean, to redshirt him, give him a year, you know, eventually I think he could play the role that I think Cal saw with Kyle Wilcher. So yes. It's not unheard of. But even Wilcher was going to have to take a redshirt year as a junior to get his body there. There's no way Derek Willis's body is there.
Yeah.
Arguably last year, you know, he played at Bullet East. You know, we taped this show in Louisville. So, you know, I heard a lot of talk about how he wasn't even the best player on his team last year with Derek Willis. There was a lot of trash talking about him. Why did Kentucky take him? Why did Cal take him? I think we will eventually see why. We will not see why anytime soon.
Correct. We forget you can stay in college for 4 years.
It's a foreign concept at Kentucky.
Is, yeah. And, you know, and what's – there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if this guy's not ready, maybe he can be ready in his junior year.
Right. And I think – you know, I think the Ryan – last year's team showed Cal to take some of those guys. I think that's why you got – well, Willis obviously committed beforehand, but the Dominique Hawkins, I mean, I think that's why you see him, because there is value in taking a point guard, stashing him for 2 or 3 years, and then when you don't have an all-world point guard in a recruiting class, you've nurtured one.
Yes, in this system, if the high school senior class is not up to par,
it hurts.
UK will struggle. And that's, you know, Cal got the best of the best out there, with the exception of UCLA kid, I'm blanking on his name. Shabazz Muhammad.
Well, and what did he turn out to
be? Yeah, he didn't turn out to be anything, but, you know, he missed on a few recruits. That's rare.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, there wasn't much to pick from. And, you know, we got to play him because everyone left. That's okay. But I think he learned. He said, look, not every recruiting class is going to be like the Michael Kidd Gilchrist and Anthony Davis, or like this one, or like the John Wall one. We're kind of seeing, you know, there's kind of like a pattern. And it looks like every other class is loaded with players, and we get those guys, and we're going to have a special season. You know, will we win the title? Who knows? But we'll have a special season. But even like next year's class may not be up to par. And guess what? All these guys are going to leave. And, you know, even if James Young doesn't have a great season, there's a good chance he's going to leave just because he's on UK's roster.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with Eric Bledsoe. I mean, Daniel Orton. A lot of guys have done that. So there is a lift effect. Let me ask you, you've got this theory. We've talked about this theory. This is the last thing I want to do with basketball, because I don't want to overdo it. I know this seems like a foreign concept, but we could overtalk basketball. It's still
what?
Early. I know, but I mean, we're digging through practice reports.
You forgot to say unpopular opinion alert.
I know. We're 2-hour practice reports, and we're talking about Derek Willis. So we may be a little premature on basketball. But that being said, you have a theory, and I want you to get this theory out there. I want to talk about this, because it seems like we've established that this team has two potential routes. The John Wall route, very talented team, but they will lose a few games, talent won't be enough, and a cold shooting night could end their title hopes. Or it could be the championship team of Gilchrist and Davis, where the talent comes together. Even on an off night, someone steps up and finishes the job. So you know, your theory that you have that you've been telling me about seems to have a correlate between those two teams and could fit this team. So explain a little bit about your basketball theory.
Well, first off, I'm kind of in the minority as well, as I think basketball is a pretty simple game. I, you know, no one's really going out there running the picket fence. You know, I think
there's no air raid spread offense.
There's
in basketball.
No, you know, this isn't Hoosiers. You know, a lot of times I think the game's evolved to where all it takes is you to have that guy on your team who you're down by one, you're coming out of a timeout, might be your last possession, and the coach just looks at you and says, give me a bucket. And or you're huddling with your team and you got that player on there that just sits there and says, guys, I got this. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. You know, I don't think, I could be wrong, I wasn't there in the huddles, but I think it went something like this. Phil Jackson, I think, looked at Michael and said, Michael, give me a bucket. And I bet at times Coach Cal in that championship year said, MKG, give me a bucket. Or, any, you know,
Davis,
Anthony,
give
Davis,
me a get open, give me a bucket.
Anthony Davis, get a stop.
Right.
MKG, get a stop. And I think this team has a couple of those. I think Julius Randle is a guy, by all accounts, from what we've heard so far. Of course, we've never seen him play yet. I think he's that guy. I think he'll get in the huddle and say, guys, I got this. Let me give me the ball. I'll put it in the basket. We'll go home. And, or, you know,
one of the twins.
Or on the twins. I think one of the twins will say, let me take it. I got it. You guys don't worry. Just give me space. And they're just going to get a basket. Or you can say the same thing on the defensive end. Huddle up together. And then I think that's what I love about the twins. They're dogs. You know, they're going to get at it and they're going to say, you're not scoring. I think that goes. That goes a long way. That's an intangible. And I think that goes a long, I think that goes farther than people give credit to. I think, you know, you can have basketball intelligence and all that stuff, but sometimes, you know, the smartest player doesn't always win. And it just takes simple, I got this. And I think the championship team had a couple of those guys. I think Wall's team had a couple of those guys. Let's face it. Wall's team, they got unlucky. They were the best team that year. They got unlucky. But
you could argue that that team did not have a guy. I mean, John Wall could not shoot.
That's
true. Sometimes to be that guy,
that's true.
You can't just drive to the basket.
Brandon Knight would have been a good example.
Well, he was the guy who took many shots.
He took a lot of shots and missed them early on the season.
And then made them.
Yes. I mean, I went to the game at Florida, and, you know, he took that last-second shot and missed it. It's okay. But he went in there. I got this.
And I think Cal subscribes to that theory as well a little bit. I don't know him personally, but I remember that Brandon Knight year.
You don't know Cal personally?
Well, I wish. I mean, I've met the guy, but we're not best. We don't text. So, you know, he even said that Brandon Knight year, when Brandon was not hitting those shots at the beginning, he said, that's okay. We need him to shoot him.
I remember that.
So I'm kind of a fan of your theory. This is the first time I've really heard it, but I think that will be the difference for this team. If Julius Randle and the Twins live up to their billing, it will be because they can create shots or even create moments. You know, like you said, whether that's a stop, whether he
right.
drives and pitches it, you know,
and
you have to create the play.
And let's put that theory to test on last year's team. They probably got in the huddle and said, who's got this?
Right.
And everyone's looking around. They didn't
not
have
me,
that guy.
Not me,
yeah,
not me.
Yeah. You know, I think that goes a long way. And I do think Poitras is going to be big because Randall being on your team is going to get you enough wins throughout the season. You know, just him being there scoring.
Right.
He's going to have an off night, though. And the Harrison twins are going to have an off night. Poitras and maybe James Young, they're going to have to realize that and step up their game and make up for it. Just a lot like Darius Miller did in the championship team.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think having these I don't know if you can really call them veterans if they're sophomores, but having these guys, and that may be where Polson really makes his mark, is a four-year guy who can come in and maybe take a shot. I mean, he's not the tallest guy, but if you're driving, and you slack off of him and he pops that three, I mean, you know, LeBron James doesn't hit every shot. He takes a lot of shots, but some of the best things about LeBron James is he knows when to drive and get that foul or pitch it off to the corner. I mean, you know, everyone forgets Ray Allen hit that magic shot
for
the Heat.
Battier, Mike Miller,
exactly.
Them games.
So, You know, but you have to have that guy who can create the moment. So I agree wholeheartedly. We're going to save some of this basketball talk. It's going to be a long basketball season. It should be a great basketball season. Chad, I really want to appreciate you filling in with us this week.
Thanks for the invite.
No problem at all. This is the Podcats. I'm Kenny Colston alongside Chad Seaver. Thanks for tuning in this week, and go Cats.